there. This is Lindsay. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. I'm excited to share this episode with you. I talked to David Wood, who is a renowned coach. And one of the things that he is passionate about teaching people is how to communicate artfully around the things that are kind of left unspoken. So tendencies that we have to keep quiet if something's bothering us, or to not voice a need or a desire. And he kind of breaks that open a little bit for us and helps us find the courage to say what we're thinking and to shorten the gap between who we really are inside and how we show up in the world. I'm so excited for you to hear his words and connect with the wisdom that he shares. This episode is brought to you by the Essential Calendar, which is a family wall calendar to help families stay organized. The summer break calendar runs from Memorial Day to Labor Day, so you can see the whole summer at a glance. You can find it at www.theessentialcalendar.com, and listeners can use code THESTRESSNANNY for 25% off. Now on to the episode. Welcome to the Stress Nanny Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Miller, and I'm so glad you're here because we are trying to make your life easier. David Wood is joining me today to help you do just that. David is a former consulting actuary to Fortune 100 companies. He built the world's largest coaching business, becoming number one on Google for life coaching and coaching thousands of hours in 12 countries around the globe. As well as helping others, David is no stranger to overcoming challenges himself. Having survived a full collapse of his paraglider and a fractured spine, witnessing the death of his sister at age 7, anxiety and depression, and a national gong show. He coaches high-performing business owners to double their revenue and their time off by focusing on less and being 30% more courageous in their business or their career. His new book, Name That Mouse, Because the Elephant Isn't the Only Animal in the Room, is what we're going to talk about today. Thank you so much for joining me, David.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Lindsay.
So let's get right into your story, because there are so many elements of it that seem like they required courage from you that is kind of out of the ordinary, not courage that most people have to kind of engage with. So talk to us about your journey with courage and if you found it straight away, or if it was something that emerged over time.
Oh, it definitely emerged over time. I mean, my mother likes to tell everyone that when I was a kid, the best way to get me to do something is tell me it couldn't be done. So I think I always had that. I'm like, oh, yeah. But in terms of courage, I think what hurt me as a kid was when I didn't face my fears. So not standing up to the bullies in school. Like, I wish I just punched one of them on the nose and taken a beating. I'd be happier about myself. I wish I'd asked the girls out that I was attracted to instead of being so worried about rejection. So later in life, when I did personal growth work, my coaches would always encourage me to lean into those fears and to go and have those conversations that were so scary. And I originally said, no, I can't do that. But then as I got coaching and I got more support, I went and did extraordinary phone calls, like calling a bully from 15 years ago that I hated, or calling a girl from school who dumped me twice and gave me the cold shoulder. They would encourage me to lean into my fears. And the more I did it, the freer I felt. I may not always get the result that I wanted, but I felt good about myself that I did the right thing. So my psychiatrist called me almost counterphobic. If I'm afraid of something, I lean into it rather than running away from it. And as I found the freedom from that, I started coaching years ago, and I would pass that on to my clients. I'm like, well, what would be an edge for you? And do you want to face that edge or no? And if they don't, that might be fine. But sometimes it's like, they're like, I do, I'm just scared. I'm like, okay, well, let's look at how you could lean into that. And there might be a baby step. But anyway, I'm a huge fan of courage for the things that we think might make our life better. Because I think when we do come to that moment to rest on our deathbed and we look back on life, the worst thing I can imagine is, oh, I should have done this. I should have spoken up more and asked for what I wanted. I should have said no more to the things I didn't want. I should have gone for that in business or in life or in work or in relationship or in changing cities or whatever it is. I'm a big fan of courage.
Yeah. Oh, those are such great examples that you shared. And I love the just the recognition that when we apply courage to those different facets of life, that it really has a big impact. And I love that you pointed out that it compounds as well. I know when at the first time I really, as a like entrepreneur, practiced courage was starting up my first business. And I just had offered to do some like light gardening for people in my community because it was winter time and I'd always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I was always having these business ideas and I'm like, oh, but I wouldn't be able to do this. Or, you know, I was letting a lot of things hold me back. And I didn't ever just lean in, like you're saying, and step into the unknown and the uncertainty and just put myself out there until this one day I was like, no, I'm just going to do it. And so I put on my little Facebook community group, hey, I'll, you know, like tidy up your perennials in your front yard and cut back your flowers, you know, for like $20 a yard. And all of a sudden I had all these people, you know, putting, yes, come to my house. Here's my address. Here's my address. Here's my address. And it was so funny because in that moment I thought, oh my gosh. All these years, right? Like I've been sitting on these ideas all these years and not acting. And all it took was that one little step to make a big difference. And then that's landed me, you know, in other scenarios and situations. And I think that courage in that moment led me to like educational courage or other, you know, other personal courage. And so I think the idea that it spreads, right? It kind of filters into other areas of our life is so powerful. And I love that you brought up fear. I know you talk about that in the book, the stories about approaching the bully and, you know, kind of making a reconciliation with yourself, right? About like what that relationship looked like. One of the things that you are working on right now is this book called Name the Mouse Because the Elephant Isn't the Only Animal in the Room. Talk to us about that title and the premise of the book.
Yeah, and that'll tie right into courage. We've changed the name to Addressing the Mouse in the Room.
Okay.
And it's because the elephant is not the only animal in the room. And, you know, it's really based on, Joe Dispenza talks about this concept of the gap. And I just love it because it's so simple. There's a gap in almost all humans between who we truly are and what we present to the world. In fact, there's sometimes a gap between who we truly are and what we present to ourselves, how we know ourselves. And as I've been encouraged throughout my life by coaches to be more transparent, be more authentic, go and have that conversation, go and express who I am. And I want to share that freedom with others as I find that. I decided to write a book about it because this gap needs to go. Not 100%, but I'd say about 80% of the gap that we have between who we are and what we present should just go. There are so many benefits. We can have more peace. We can have more influence over people if we want that. More leadership, more connection, more intimacy. I came up with this concept of addressing the mouse in the room because we all know about the elephant. You see it, I see it, no one's saying anything. But many creatures in the room are much more subtle. It might be that I'm feeling sad about something that happened. Today, I felt a bit discombobulated and thrown because I wanted to just goof off, but I had all these commitments. And when you and I connected first on this call, I could have skipped over that, but you asked me how I was. So I decided to name a mouse. Hey, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's going on. Then we got to talk about that and geek out on that a little bit. So I'm a big fan of discover your own mice. Like what's there? It might be I'm upset that someone's late. It might be I felt a little offended by something that you said last week. It might be that I'm just really tired and I'm hoping you don't notice it. Who knows? Any thought that hasn't been shared is a mouse. Any feeling could be a body sensation or emotion. Those are the three: thoughts, emotions, and body sensations. Those are all fair game. And as we can start to artfully name those, and that's a whole other conversation, is people like, but how can I say to someone I was offended, I'm offended by their smoking, or, you know, I'm really annoyed they just threw some litter on the ground. How can I do that without them taking my head off? well, part of the book is how to artfully name that mouse and express it. And then you can check in for their mice. Hey, how is it for you to hear that? And see what comes up for them. And you ping pong back in reality versus here's what you I want you to see about me. And then you show me what you want me to see about you. And we're basically doing a play. Right? I'm acting, you're acting. Well, let's remove the gap and actually be ourselves in the world. And that really, oh, that really can take some courage.
Yes, yes. I love that imagery of the gap. And that, like, if we're having conversations in the gap, or, you know, that there's just a big gap between us showing up fully and the place where we're having a conversation. And it, like, who wants to be that far from themselves? None of us really, but we do consistently, right? Like you're saying.
Yeah. And there are, again, there are two gaps. So there's a gap between what's really going on for me and what I'm consciously aware of. And then, and I want to say more about that. And then there's a gap between what I'm aware of and what I'm showing. And so this first one, we need to become more self-aware. I might have tension in my shoulders for 40 minutes before I notice it. I discovered a mouse today. I realized there were a number of people who I did one session with to see if we might be a fit. And then, you know, often people will then go on to register for coaching. We work together, but some people want to think about it and I may not hear from them again. And so to, you know, this week I'm like, I want to check in with these people and see how they're doing. And are they all set or do they want coaching? And I got honest with myself today and realized this is a real vulnerable edge for me. I'm worried I'm going to be annoying them, or, you know, I might reach out to 50 people and none of them are interested. I might feel less worthy or something like that. So it was good to at least name that mouse for myself. It's like, oh, this is an edge for me. And then having named the mouse, I realized, oh, I could name that with the people I'm reaching out to. I could say, you know, part of me thinks, just leave you alone. If you want to come back to me in the next 5 years, you will. And another part of me says, hey, maybe a follow-up would be really helpful. Like, that was very useful out of that. So I got clearer with myself. Then you can decide if you want to name it with someone else. So the way I want to break it down in my head right now is, one, discover. Discover what's actually going on. All you may know is, I don't feel good about what happened. That might be it. Or I don't like that person, right? So there's some exercises in the book to discover what you're really feeling. Oh, this is why it's annoying me. This is what I don't want. This is what I do want. Get clear on that stuff. The second step is decide. And these fit nicely into triple D, 3D. Discover, decide, will I name this? And in the book, we take you through a process like, how's your investment with this person? Is this someone that you're really invested in? Is this someone, how's their receptivity? And you weigh it all up and decide, you know what? I'm going to name this or I'm not. And that both are fine. And then the third D is disarm. So you don't want to just launch in with, hey, we need to talk. You get yourself in trouble like that. And so there are some steps for how to actually artfully name the mouse so that you're likely to get the best possible result.
No, those are great. Well, I love the imagery of the mouse. And like you said, things that you just kind of become aware of, they could just kind of flit across your consciousness.
Yes.
Or across your experience, just like a mouse. Like usually it's in hiding, right? We don't see them.
Right.
Tucked away in the corner. But once it kind of scurries across the room in some form of your consciousness, you can bring it to the surface and then be like, oh, wait, I did just notice that. What is that?
That's true. That. Now, some mice are really quite big and we call them rodents of unusual size. Yes, for any Princess Bride fans. So the ROUSs, you know, might be really big, like you're just really angry with someone and you know why, right? So that's a really big mouse. But as you say, some of them are so subtle, which is why we call them mice. And it you might not even be clear. I once had a podcast host, I offered them a coaching session as a gift and he missed the session. And I wrote, and I said, what happened? And he said, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. I've rebooked it for next week. And all I knew was that I didn't want to do the session. That was all. I was just, I don't want to do it. Now, the temptation came through my mind is, I just lie. I just say, I'm busy now. I'm too busy. I can't do it. And I decided to take a risk. But first, I had to discover. Because it wasn't, and I've been coaching for 20-something years, but I still wasn't clear for myself what was going on. And as I went through the questions to work out what's going on, I realized I felt disrespected. The fact that he assumed I'm just going to book it again, and that he didn't tell me what went wrong and what's going to be different next time. And so I once I got clear, I was like, I'm going to take a risk. So I sent him a very polite video saying, look, if you don't want to hear any of this, do not watch any further, which is the consent piece, because you always want to get consent. But I said, if you are open, keep listening. And here's what's going on. I felt disrespected. I'm not saying you intended that. That's just how I felt, right? Taking ownership. And I'm not confident that you would show up for a second one because I don't know what happened. So here are my requests, because I would like to help you. But here are my requests. One, let me know what happened. Two, let me know what would be different next time so I can feel confident you'll be there. And three, give me some way of letting me know that you do respect my time and that you do appreciate this call that we're going to have. And it's totally fine if you don't want to do any of those things. But that's what I would need. And it was a big risk. He could have gone any direction from that. And I got this amazing response saying, oh my God, can I share this video on my podcast? Like, you are talking the truth. You are speaking real talk right now. And so there's an example of where I didn't even know what was going on until I did a little bit of work. So you can do the exercises in the book to get clear. You can work with a coach. You could talk to a friend. You can check with your mastermind, your men's group, your women's group, your non-binary group. Whatever it is, discover your mice and then artfully name them.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a great example, because there is such a tendency in those moments when you feel, especially when you feel hurt, right? Or you feel unseen in some way. Like you said, you felt disrespected. Like, I don't even think this person connected with what I was offering or what the cost, you know, what it was going to cost me to offer this. And then now not showing up, and how it would be so easy to just say, oh, I'm just going to say this and gloss over it to create an atmosphere where maybe there's no external tension in the gap between you and the person, but for you, you're holding all the tension in your own.
Yeah, we do. There's a whole world going on. So many thoughts that go on. And look, they don't all need to make it to the surface. If they did, that'd be a problem too. But I think we're censoring and editing so much of it, too much of it. And part of it is because we were never trained in how to artfully name those mice, how to discover them, and then how to artfully name them. And it is a bit, not addictive, but I think you talked about, I forget the word you mentioned. You forgot the word I mentioned. Now I'm forgetting the word you mentioned, but there is a bit of a ripple effect. As you start being more transparent, you get better at it. Yeah. And then you're also modeling for your partner, for your kids, for people around you. And so they might think, oh, maybe I could share some of my mice. I want a world. This is why I'm writing the book. I want a world where kids will go up to their parents and say, hey, mommy, can I name a mouse with you? And the parent says, yeah, what do you got? And they can just share their feelings and thoughts and desires. And they may not get all those met, but they can at least share them and be heard. That's the world I want, where it's part of our culture. Can I name a mouse with you? Yeah. Oh, what you got?
Yes. Well, and that's such great imagery too, again, because I think especially with kids, this idea of using animals or using story to help them understand what's going on is something I'm really big on. And adults benefit as well, right? When we can take it in story form, it becomes a little more accessible, especially for kids. And I think kids can feel overwhelmed by a lot of those things pretty regularly. And I would love that world too, where they feel confident and able to articulate to the best of their ability what they're experiencing, and then have that received in a really gracious way that supports further expression.
Yes, I want that for kids. And our second project after this one, we're thinking about maybe teaming up with someone who's really good with kids' books and doing Mouse in the Room for kids. I think that'd be really cool. Nice. And clearly I want this for adults as well. I mean, part of my job with my amazing clients is to help them spot the mice that they don't see yet. Because I can sometimes hear it. It's like, sounds like you have a desire for this. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, but I can't really ask for that. Well, and then we workshop it a little bit, and then maybe they go and ask for what they want. Might be a pay raise, might be something sexual in the bedroom. It might, like, who knows what it is. And then maybe you get it. But regardless, you get to feel good about yourself because you have agency and you're being a leader in the world. And maybe you get it, maybe you don't. Someone coached me a little bit about this outreach I've been doing recently with past people who were considering coaching. And after talking with her, I realized the real win is that I did what feels right for me, that I wanted to reach out. That's my job. Their job is whatever they're going to do. And she used this great expression, which I'm going to steal and use a lot. She said, you're moving the ball further down the field. And I thought, what a great sport. I don't even play football, but you know, you're moving the ball further down the field. You're telling the universe what you want and expressing yourself, and then we'll see what happens. Some people believe, and even some people studying quantum physics now, that when you do express your true desires to the world, then the universe or the quantum field will respond. Now, look, I can't prove it, but I do believe that if you don't express those desires, you're really making it hard for yourself. I mean, why tie one foot behind your back? That's crazy. But if you do express it, then the universe has got a chance of saying, all right, let's do this. One of the things that I want now in life is I would love to play the lead role in a major film. I just started acting 3 months ago. And I've done eight short films, and I just played the lead in a play. So I'm working towards it. But if I don't put it out there, if I don't name that big mouse of mine, for 10 years, I had this dream, this secret dream. I thought one day I'd love to move to LA and just give it a full-on solid go at acting for a year or two. Just live the life of an actor. Make it, don't make it, didn't really matter. But I didn't tell anybody because it was just in the background, and it was a pretty small mouse, and I didn't know if I'd ever do it, and I didn't want to feel silly about saying no. And then 3 months ago, I started telling people. I said, hey, I'm thinking maybe next year's the time to move to Los Angeles. And one of the people I told said, oh, I did that. I moved to LA to pursue acting. So we got to geek out on that. And then she called me a few days later and said, I'm going to audition for a local play. Do you want to come with me and audition? I'm like, gulp. Sure. I'll do it. And then got cast as the lead in a local production of Dracula and got paid, professional production.
Wow.
Which, in fact, hang on a second. For anyone who is watching the video, I'm going to see if I have, here we go. There is.
Oh, wow.
There's a.
There you are.
Yep. There's Dracula.
Wow.
Yeah. So that came out of naming that mouse, but I couldn't even tell you that was a mouse for a while. I had to discover that mouse. Then you name it, put it out there to the universe, get to feel good about doing that. And as a bonus, you may get what you want. I ended up getting to be an actor, a professional working actor. That's a bonus. The real win was speaking it and then going and auditioning. I say that's the win.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Because the idea of just being present with what is for you is so powerful, right? I mean, this is what's going on for me. Once you said, like, you discover what is going on for you, once you discover it, being able to sit with it and own it, it allows you to be present in a way that lets life engage with you differently. Like you said, things can come to you and find you once you're really present with what you want, where you're at, and where you'd like to be.
That's right. And I think we haven't really talked about work, but I work with a lot of business owners and then some managers. And this is totally applicable at work as well. If you can be more transparent, I find that the world responds well. Now, some people will run for the hills. They're like, oh my God, I don't want that. So if that's the case, maybe those people shouldn't be in your life, or that you might want to consider a new work environment if it really isn't going to go over well. But if you're artfully naming mice, what happens is people tend to want to be around you more. They trust you more. They like you more because they know who you are. And there might be a little bit of vulnerability in expressing that. And I think it leads to more money. It leads to a promotion. It leads to more responsibility. It leads to you often getting what you want. I went to, you know, years and years ago, I went to my boss in Australia and said, I just traveled for a year and now I know I can't afford to keep doing it. Could I get a transfer to another country? It was a big, bold request. Well, through a series of very fortunate coincidences, I ended up getting an interview on Park Avenue in New York and got the job to transfer countries, and then was consulting to Sony Music and Ford and Exxon and Procter & Gamble, and like had an office at the age of 24 on Park Avenue. And it was out of naming that big mouse that I had. I was like, this is a desire I have. Could it happen? If I'd never said anything, I don't know, maybe if I'd meditated and you know, followed the secret method and Joe Dispenza's stuff and whatever, maybe I could have just called in the quantum field. I'm not a fan of that. I'm saying, look, do the meditation, do all the law of attraction stuff, and then take massive action.
Yeah. Well, and just the verbalizing, right? Articulating what it is so much of the process, because you can feel into it. And you can kind of intuit what you want. But when you have to actually articulate what it is that you want with clarity, and like you said, artfully, that's a whole different layer of communication, right? Like you said, putting it out there in a way that lets it find you. So giving yourself the chance to go after it. And I appreciate those powerful examples you shared. One of the things that I want to circle back to, we talked about it in terms of career, and I totally agree. And I've seen that play out in various ways in both my career, my partner's career. And I think that when you loop it back into family life, the kids in our lives are so great at pointing out the mice. And a lot of times we want to hush them, right? We want to be like, shh, don't talk about that mouse. You know, we don't want to bring that up. But I think kids can really invite us to be aware of, and then just practice talking about those different types of mice, because they are so observant, and because they haven't, maybe they haven't widened that gap, right, yet between what they think is socially appropriate and what they actually observe. So We can look to them, I think, a lot for opportunities to like let the mouse come out. And a lot of it is how we respond to them that tells them whether or not it's safe to keep talking about the mice, right? I think we can culturally kind of remove that tendency from them by the way we receive their communication. What do you think of that?
Remove which tendency?
Like when they're pointing out mice, because kids are just good at telling it like it is, right? Yep. They'll just say, like the other day, Mom, this meal that we had for dinner,
I agree. Like kids are really good at pointing out mice. Yes. I just missed which tendency you were referring to.
So the tendency, I think as adults, we have a tendency to kind of, in our efforts to help them be socially appropriate humans, we have a tendency to widen that gap for them. Like increase this filter, like, don't say that. Oh, we don't bring that up. We're not going to talk about that. Instead of just like letting us have the conversation and practicing maybe a little bit sloppily, but figuring out how to converse in those ways.
That's a good point. They're basically showing us that we could be more transparent. And I think what we want to show them is how to artfully name the mice, and also how to choose better which mice to share and which night. Now, we've gone way too far. We just squashed down so many mice, and we're being so careful, and we're walking on eggshells. And for good reason. It's probably because we've had some bad experiences doing it, and we haven't got this book to show us how to artfully name them. So we want to protect our kids. We're like, oh, you should just don't say that and don't do that. Well, hopefully after reading this book, you might say to your kid, well, this, let's think about how that might land for the other person. Like, what might happen for them? And just start exploring it more, and then look at what would be a nicer way to share that. You know, let's suppose someone gave you a birthday present and you hate it. What's a nicer way to share it? Or maybe that's something you don't share. But if we just use our own filters and pass those on to our kids, then the kid's going to have to wait 20 years until they read the book and then go, oh, wow, you know, I need to really open up more. So maybe we can meet somewhere in the middle between the parents and the kids, and still be expressive, almost as expressive as kids, and with some discernment and some more artistry in how we share it. There's some things that I become aware of, or my clients become aware of, and we just realize there's no profit. There's no upside in sharing that. Like, you go to someone's house and it's really messy. They don't need to hear how messy you think it is, right? So just because there's one headline in the book that says, hide nothing does not mean share everything. Yes. And there's a whole section on how to decide. How to decide, is this something worthwhile? Now, look, sometimes it's so easy. You're just like, and it might be a positive mouse. You might be like, oh, I just so admire how you do this at work. You don't need any training on how to share that. You can just say to someone, do you mind if I just let you know I'm really impressed with how you do that? Boom, right? That's easy. But when they're harder and you're like, oh, I just don't know how to do that, that's when this book can come in handy and maybe give you a way to do it. I heard someone recently, there was a mouse that she wanted to share, and she decided to sidestep it and just have less interaction with the person. And look, that's a valid move. Sometimes you'll do that. But I think she was missing an opportunity, that had she shared more of herself, who knows what that could have opened up. The other person could have said, oh, I had no idea that that's what was going on for you, you know, and they could be deeper connected. So that's where I'm heading. Like, let's nudge more and more in that direction.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, it's not lost on me, this idea of courage, and that we're using courage to navigate these moments of tiny little mice, right? But they do feel like really big, courageous moments. And I love that. Well, before we go, can I just ask you three questions that I ask podcast guests? One is your favorite food.
Kimchi.
Okay. Your favorite way to relax.
Massage chair.
And then a funny story or memory from childhood.
A funny story or memory from childhood. Well, this would be funny for other people, I think. It's not particularly funny for me, but apparently I was wild as a kid, and mum would turn around and I'd be off down the street, whatever. So sometimes what she or my babysitter would do is they would, I don't know how old I was. Hopefully I wasn't too old, but they would tie me to the clothesline with a length of pantyhose. Yeah. Years of therapy. No. Pantyhose, so that, you know, I could only run so far. And they said sometimes I'd run, I'd get to the end, and it'd spring me back, and I'd end up on my back. Okay, it does sound funny when I imagine it happening to someone else.
I know. Okay, well, yeah. Thank you so much, David, for joining me today. Tell people where they can find the book.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to give two URLs out. If you're interested in coaching with me, if you want more transparency, or maybe just to be more of you in life, then go to focus.ceo, scroll down to the bottom and apply for a session with me, and we'll see if we're a fit. And if you want a mouse in the room, you can go to there's a special link that I've created where you can get a couple of free downloads from me and get access to the mouse in the room and coaching as well. And this is a special link. It's myfocusgift.com. I wanted something memorable that would take people to a hidden page on my site where they could get on my mailing list and be in touch with me. And it's just for podcast listeners. And that's myfocusgift.com.
Great. Thank you again. This has been so insightful. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Great to meet you, Lindsay.
You too. Thanks again for listening. I would love to hear what you thought of this episode. There were times when he was talking where I was like, oh, I do that. You know, I stay quiet in moments when I could speak up, or I don't always say what I think. And I really appreciated his emphasis on just artfully communicating and owning that, like, the way we show up is the only thing we can control. And we can't control other people's responses, but we can control how authentically we show up every day. So here's to a little more authenticity. If you like this episode, I would really appreciate it if you would go ahead and give the podcast a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen on. I would also love it if you would share the podcast with a friend. The Stress Nanny is growing, and it's so fun to see the podcast touch lives in ways that really reduce stress and help people live with more resilience and more courage. So thank you for sharing, and thank you for listening. Until next time.